The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Hey, we're back. It's episode number 407 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. We call it the Riverfront now. It used to be something different. I don't know. Can't remember. It's been a long time. With me today is, your friend and mine, the best baseball author on the planet Earth, as we determined in our recent Patreon special podcast, Chris Garber. How are you, Chris?
Doing well. Thank you very much.
And also with us is, I don't remember his name. I'm trying to read it there. I can't really see what that says. I think it's Nate Dotson. How are you, Nate?
Could not be better. Just glad you guys still let me in this little club.
Well, we haven't started the admission rituals yet. Well, just wait. You may not want to stick around. Chris walked into this little party tonight with he thought he was going to have a clever name there on his, below his gorgeous face. And so we stole his little gag, but I got to give Chris credit. Chris, who is Steve Selsky? Come on. It's not a real person.
I believe Steve Selsky played for the 2016 Cincinnati Reds. I was just screwing around earlier and looking to see who had the record for most hits in a game for the Reds. And of course it's Philip Irvin, but
obviously
it really is Philip Irvin. But Steve Selsky was second place on. He had five. He went 5-for-5 on a game in September 16th, 2016, which I have no reason to believe didn't actually happen.
I remember Steve Selsky. I mean, I remember the name. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup, but
you would have asked me which team he played for. I don't think I would have guessed the Reds. I'd been like, yeah, he played baseball somewhere. I remember that guy.
Big hitter for the Rangers a few years back.
Yeah. Give me 30 guesses. I'll get it within those 30 guesses. So let's start with the news of the week. There's not really any news of the week. The teams are still locked out. Have you been following the lockout? They're asking for a lot. Both sides are asking for things. The other side are not willing to give, and they just start kind of talking a little bit.
It's cold out right now. I've been advised that you're supposed to let people in, let your animals in. Don't lock people out in the cold.
It was a good effort. That was a good
effort. If it's fair for your cat or dog, it's fair for Mike Moustakas.
As we've always said, one of the things we constantly talk about here on the Riverfront. Yeah, the lockout. They're locked out. I guess we ask this question every week. We might as well go ahead and ask it again. How are we feeling? Are they going to play 162? Nate, with it?
Yeah, I still think so. They're talking more than they have been. I think they met back-to-back days, which is encouraging. They're still a really long way apart, so I'm no longer as optimistic as I used to be about spring training beginning on time. I'm starting to get a little worried about opening day, but I still think we'll play the full slate.
Chris?
They want the full slate of money, don't they? The owners? So they'll play the full slate. One thing I read this week kind of boiled it down to they may still be far apart, but they're starting to narrow down the issues.
Yeah.
And what this commentator was saying was basically that basically all the players' offers that are on the table right now should be acceptable to the owners. So now it's just a matter of how hard they want to squeeze. Basically, the owner, the players have given up on the real, real change makers. Things like, you know, earlier free agency, or right. or a much higher minimum salary. Things that would have made kind of a tangible difference. But at this point, they're not really pushing on those anymore. So it's just a matter of degree. And that doesn't mean it'll be fast, but it means there should probably be a deal.
Yeah, and also I saw that the owners and players have kind of the owners have not fully given in, but are open to the possibility of this like a pool of money for pre-arbitration players. And what I saw, the report I saw was this certain amount of money, whatever set aside, this pool would be for the top 30 pre-arbitration players by wins above replacement, whichever wins above replacement they choose to use. But now the players want $150 million. In that pool, and the owners have countered with $10 million. So, I mean, you know, okay, right. We'll give you a pool. We'll toss a couple of bucks in there.
Yeah. So at that point, right, I mean, it's just a matter of how much.
Right.
Which you can always get a deal once you decide, once you've narrowed it down to how much you're going to get a deal, just a matter of how much you can stand. I mean, but, you know, and how much the owners try to squeeze, take away arbitration years for that.
Yeah.
You know, they like this whole idea of pay for play, pay for performance, pay for wins above replacement, because it they never can make a mistake then.
All right.
The player always gets paid based on what they've already done, so you can never have a bad contract. You always either – it's a win-win for the owners.
Yeah, Nick Krog is protected there.
Some of it looks like there's some slippery slopes on the horizon. I mean, the Baseball Reference – guy, he just straight up kind of said that he doesn't like the idea of them using his metric.
I wouldn't either.
Constantly evolving. And then some of the other benchmarks, they were saying if you won a war, it's a rookie of the year and all that kind of thing. And like the media people that are voting on these, it puts them in a really weird position. So I don't know how far we'll get with that. But it's troublesome to me.
Yeah, imagine, you know, because they are constantly kind of massaging and changing the formulas for wins above replacement. You know, you do something, cost some guy $3 million or something, you know, because he drops him out of the top 30. You know, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't want my. Matter of fact, I will offer my WAR calculations if baseball wants to use them. You know, I'll figure out some calculation. I'll write it down on the back of a napkin. But
yeah,
to answer my question,
yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, if you think about what do these all have in common? They all have in common, like, ways to not pay people.
Right.
Or not, you know, to pay a couple guys, but not everybody. So, from that perspective, the owners are getting exactly what they want.
One of my favorite tidbits so far is the amount that the owners said they would raise the salary floor. You know, if you account for inflation, if you believe in that sort of thing, it's still less money than
it's they negative, were. It's
negative,
right? It's a 5% bump or something like that in the minimum salary. Yeah,
great. It almost looks like we're on the path of the players losing again. I mean, don't they lose every one of these? I mean, basically the owners have just decided to wait them out at this point. I mean, on a lot of things, that's why they've not really been negotiating in good faith. But I do think we'll get 162 games. Answer my initial question: we will get 162 games. Now, I don't know if each team will get 162, but there will be at least 162 baseball games played this year. That's my prediction.
So. One thing I haven't heard much talk about, and I don't know if this is because they assume it's a done deal or because maybe it won't happen, is playoff expansion.
I haven't heard much about that, have we?
No, or even the DH. I mean, I feel like the DH is kind of like assumed to be a done deal. Maybe. And for the Reds' perspective, with two subpar third basemen, I guess we get a subpar third baseman and a subpar DH now.
Right.
But at least they're like kind of set up where it's going to help them.
Yeah. What's that, Nate?
So that was a pretty kind way of putting it. Chris is going good today.
Yeah. Nice. I'm a little surprised we've not heard more about those. And I'm sure the Castellanos are dying for that expanded playoffs.
I was reading something today saying that the reason we haven't heard much about it is because it's kind of a done deal. The owners are not going to negotiate anything else without accepting that. Obviously, don't know if this is true, but it's like this is just going to happen one way or the other. And I see all the arguments against it, you know, in a vacuum. I'm against it also. But I just think it's one of those things that in a few years we won't think about anymore. And the players probably know that. Okay, if we can get some of these other things, in a few years nobody's going to care because the other leagues do it, and I don't see anybody complaining.
That's true. I mean, nobody complains about watching playoffs of any sport.
Yeah, the old guys will still grumble, but the old guys are going to grumble anyway because it wasn't like the game was it like, you know, when they were kids. So yeah, we'll be out there yelling at clouds. So. News of the week in terms of specific Cincinnati news, there really, as you might expect, not a lot. The Reds did invite six minor leaguers, extended invitations to six minor leaguers for big league spring training. And really the headline there is Nick Lodolo, also Nate's favorite guy, Graham Ashcraft.
Yeah.
Chris Oakey, catcher, I don't know, maybe have a chance to make it on the big league roster since the Reds only have one catcher. But so, I don't know. Nick Lodolo, but Nick Lodolo is not going to make the opening day roster, is he? I mean, does anybody think Nick Lodolo is going to make the opening day roster?
No. I mean, they shut him down at the end of the last season because of shoulder fatigue. I don't think you rush this guy to get him into the big league lineup anytime soon. He'll be there.
Yeah, unless they make some kind of rule that service time no longer has any effect.
Right.
Maybe they'll take him.
Yeah, I don't see it. So that's basically it. We are doing a podcast basically every week in which there is no Reds news.
I don't think you spoke enough about Graham Ashcraft.
I know you like that guy.
I'm so big on my boy Graham.
You know, he was pretty good last year.
44 consecutive innings without giving up an earned run.
129 strikeouts, 37 walks. Throws lots of ground ball. Sounds like a good reliever to me.
Mm-hmm. What? Rude.
Sorry. Resident relievers. Okay. So anyway, that's that. We could probably just stop here. Maybe we should. Maybe we should.
Well, we do. See you next week.
Oh, Nate actually left.
He did the theme song.
I was kidding, Nate. We're not quite ready to leave. We're going to go to the topic of the week now, though. I don't know where Nate went, but. The topic of the week, and this week, you know, we're trying to come up with some creative things to talk about. This week it is – no, actually, we're not going to do the top of the week yet. See, I got ahead of myself. Chris, why don't you tell me? I wasn't looking at our agenda.
Sorry.
We're going to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame quickly. Do you have any thoughts about the news that came out this week about the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Good for David.
Oh, my gosh. What's happening here?
How did that happen?
Wait.
How did that happen?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what's going on here.
It's very confusing.
Talk to cats, Nate, living
come into my, Nate, come into my window.
Yeah, Nate, go
come to on see over.
Oh,
come
my in,
come into my studio. That's
Nate,
weird.
How'd you do that? Why didn't you go see Chris?
Magic.
The magic of the interwebs. Hall of Fame, Chris.
Congratulations to Minnesota Twins slugger David Ortiz. On his election to the Hall of Fame, it's good. Look, good for Ortiz. He had a pretty fun career. Did a lot of big moments. You know, I have no fight with David Ortiz. I look at that Hall of Fame ballot, and David Ortiz is probably what the eighth best player on that ballot, and he's the only one that got elected. So, you know. The Hall of Fame voters and baseball. Look, baseball got what they wanted. They wanted to punish Barry Bonds. They wanted to punish Roger Clemens. They wanted to punish players in general. So they went on a 20-year campaign of stigmatizing, demonizing, and scapegoating baseball players for doing what they let them do in the 1990s. And what they profited from in the 1990s. You may recall chicks digging long balls. And that was encouraged. And then all of a sudden it wasn't. Because it was time for a labor negotiation. And it was time to make these guys look like cheaters and crooks and bad apples who you don't want to defend. So they rigged the vote. They changed the rules of the Hall of Fame. And then you've got a Hall of Fame electorate that, by and large, is older and more judgmental and you have the best hitter and one of the top two or three pitchers of all time not represented in a museum dedicated to the history of the sport.
Yeah. This was the week when, I mean, it was already broken. It's been broken for years, the process. This is the week when the Baseball Hall of Fame became completely irrelevant. You know, just irretrievable. Because, and the reason we're saying this, of course, if you haven't followed it, I'm sure you have if you're watching this, but Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens did not get in. They dropped off the ballot now. They're no longer going to be on the ballot to be, not going to be candidates next year for the Hall of Fame. And it's just a complete joke. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And, you know, it's been trending this way for a while. And I don't know what else to say other than I used to really enjoy the discussion and the drama around the Hall of Fame. I don't know. There's something about it, I guess, as a kid. And then even into adulthood, I like the discussion. I like the, you know, should this guy get in? Is this guy good enough? Is he not good enough? You know. And now, what are the standards? I mean, you know, great players are not in. Players who are decidedly not as good as some of these guys that are quote-unquote bad guys are getting in. Guys who tested positive for PEDs, like David Ortiz are in. But he was a nice guy. He smiled a lot. And maybe he'll have you. There you go. Exactly. Guys who have no business being in, like Harold Baines, are in the Hall of Fame. So I guess the only thing to do now is just to ignore it. I don't know anything else to do. It's a joke of an institution, and I don't know. I have no interest anymore.
I know. You know, Chad, I think Joe Posnanski wrote a column this week about the Hall of Fame election, and he said, you know how much fun it was when Buck O'Neill and Minnie Minoso and a couple other guys got elected last month, and how much we just talked about baseball for 2 days?
That's how much King Griffey Jr. thing there. And
yeah. And how, anyway. But how much fun it was, and how much the Hall of Fame used to be about celebrating these great players and being excited. And now it's just like this big downer where guys who should be in there are not. And it's just kind of a bummer of a week. Now, I'll say this. You know, I agree with you. It's irrelevant. I agree with you that it sucks. And yesterday I was on Google Maps seeing how long it would take me to drive up there with my kids in 3 weeks just to see it. So, guilty.
Oh, man. Come on. You got to take a stand, Baines. What do you think, Nate?
You guys pretty much, you know, hit everything every nail on the head. I know we've belabored this point quite a bit in the past, but get them a plaque that says, you know, Bonds probably took some stuff. Bonds was terrible with the media. He was a butthole. Like, you can say all these things. I feel the same way about Pete. You can be like, yeah, this guy was a jerk who did stupid stuff, but he also hit the ball more than anybody ever in the history of this game. And you're here for one reason, to look upon the important players, important moments, important actors in the history of this game. I am just – you can't care about the Hall of Fame, at least anywhere near the way you used to. It just doesn't matter as much anymore. I think anybody who argues that they should not be in the Hall, especially, you know, Bonds and Clemens specifically, is just the worst take I can imagine. I mean, Sosa, yeah, like that guy needed PEDs to even like get close to the ballot. But Bonds and Clemens were two of the best to ever do it, and to not be represented whatsoever, it's a tragedy. I hate it.
Yeah, you know, when I was in school, we took a quick road trip, me and some friends, to Cooperstown. And it was memorable. It was fun. It was an incredible weekend. And I always figured, well, I'm going to take my son one of these days. And good luck, Chris, if you do it. Go do it. You know, I just if I have the opportunity, I will too, probably, just to take my son. I mean, you know, I got to admit, because the museum is fantastic. It really is fantastic. But
you will have less fun.
Well, I think Jason Stark said it this week, you know, he kind of said it like a old Chris Carpenter for the Cardinals, you know, how do we explain to the kids, you know, but how do you explain in 150 years, you know, when you're looking at the Hall of Fame, that the guy who has more home runs than anyone ever is not in there. The guy who has more hits than anyone ever is not in there. The guy who's won more Cy Young awards than anyone else is not in there. I mean, it's just.
But Bud Selig is.
Bud Selig is, yes, right. And Harold Baines.
What Cap Anson is, right? Cap Anson in there? I don't know. Yeah.
I saw a stat that said if you turned every one of Barry Bonds' home runs into outs, he still would have had a higher career on base percentage than Big Bob.
I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. But, yeah, Cap Anson's in there. Ty Cobb's in there. Those guys, good guys?
I think they just need restrictions on who's allowed to vote for this stuff. They need to get more selective with who gets a vote. I remember a while back, I don't know if it's still the case, if they've changed it at all recently, but it used to be that there were people that hadn't been in journalism in 20, 25 years getting votes.
I mean, they cleaned up some of that, I think.
They did, but here's the thing. I mean, so what happens next for Bonds and Clemens? They go to these veterans committees, right? Today's game committee. It ain't going to get better. You saw who led the charge, you know, with the torches and pitchforks? Joe Morgan.
Yep.
The guys that are already in that gallery, some of them have no perspective on this. And, you know, forget what went on in the clubhouse they were in and are just as judgmental as anybody else. So it's not going to get fixed by, you know what I mean? Like you improve the you improve the voting, unless you say the three of us get to pick, there's going to be some ding-dongs in that with a ballot in their hand.
Yeah, right. And it's not going to get any better on these committees later on. The best hope was that enough kind of new voters would come into the pool by the time Bonds and Clemens left the ballot. And I think that's all, that something like 90% of the new Hall of Fame voters since they came on the ballot voted for Bonds and Clemens.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not going to help them going forward. It's just it's a joke. Oh, goodness. Can we talk about something else?
Scott Rowland got close.
Well, Scott Rowland should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer to me. And I think he probably does get in. But, yeah, he got closer. When you look at the third baseman that are in the Hall, there are very, very few. Scott Rowland is absolutely deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. But he was a Cardinal for a while, so screw that guy. Okay, topic of the week. Topic of the week this week brought to you from, the home office in Kalamazoo, Michigan, I guess. Top five Reds starting pitchers of all time. Our Reds top five list. Top five starting pitchers in Reds history. We have a lot of similar names on our list, so let's just go ahead and dive right into those. We'll start with our number five picks. And Chris, you have a number five pick that did not make it onto any of our other lists. Who's your number five top of the top five Reds starting pitchers at?
Tom Seaver. And I thought it was going to be tricky and put him in at the end. But, Tom Seaver is one of the greatest pitchers in baseball history, just not exactly in his time as a Red. So that was my just trying to get some different names on the list. But Seaver obviously threw a no-hitter as a Red, had some really, really underrated seasons, including the 81 split season, when he probably should have won the Cy Young Award. And like everybody else in Cincinnati, got robbed that year. But Tom Terrific, it's stunning to think that a guy like that got added to what was still the core of the Big Red Machine. And they weren't able to win another pennant with him. But Tom Seaver.
Yeah, if you're talking top pitchers that they would pitch for the Reds, look at their whole career. I mean, Seaver is, you know, he may be number one. I mean, I guess who else is on that list?
Christian Mathewson, one game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One game, yeah. But, I mean, Tom Seaver, Inner Circle Hall of Famer. So, my number five on my list of top five Reds starting pitchers of all time made it onto Nate's list at number four. So, I'll go ahead and talk about it now. It's Johnny Cueto. And I had a difficult time with this fifth one, but I went with Cueto because you can name a bunch of guys in this fifth spot. But Cueto, for at least a short period of time, shorter than some of the other top players, really, really well, he was Johnny Cueto, and we've covered his career here. Literally, his entire career was within the confines of this podcast's history. So he debuted the year after this podcast debuted. So just 2008 to 2015, just an incredible run. And I don't know. Also, you know, as we've said many, many times, if we're ranking top five Instagram accounts, he's probably number one.
I started following that after your recommendation, and it is an absolute joy.
It's a joy.
It's delightful. It is delightful. Nate, who's your number five?
So I kind of thought this might be on one of your alls, and it wasn't. I went with Aroldis Chapman.
Smart.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Pitchers, how do you argue against it? In 2012, he had a 274 ERA plus. The guy was Cy Young votes, MVP votes. He was the most electrifying player I've ever witnessed in a Reds uniform. And granted, I took a slightly different approach. I went with a couple older guys, but I tried to pick a few that I actually got to watch play. And he was the most memorable of my lifetime that ever stepped on that mound. That's for sure.
And should have been a starter.
Should have been a starter.
Ryan Madsen. I should have changed my name to Ryan Madsen while he was talking on the screen here. Oh,
he comes.
Anyway, all right. So that's our number fives. Nate, we already got your number four, Johnny Cueto. Anything you want to say about Cueto really quickly?
Not really. I think people kind of forget how powerful he was. You know, he was the 2008 season. You know, he started out with us 18 Ks and no walks in his first two starts. He ends up sharing the strikeout crown with Steven Strasburg. When you don't really think of Johnny Cueto and Steven Strasburg as the same type of pitcher, but yeah, he was nasty.
He was indeed. He was indeed. So for number four, Chris and I had the same number four, and it's a guy that I'm guessing some of you guys have never heard of. It's Dolph Luque. Dolph Luque, Cuban, I think, right, Chris?
Yes, sir. First, wasn't the first Cuban Red, but he was really the only Cuban major league star in the kind of pre-integration era.
Right. And he was just he debuted in 1914 as a 23-year-old with Boston Braves, and then pitched in two games the next year, and then didn't show up again until he was 27 in Cincinnati, and began a stretch of basically 10 years where he was among the best pitchers in baseball, culminating the high point, I guess, was his age 32 season when he went 27-8, 1.93 ERA, 201 ERA plus, and, brilliant, and a guy that many Reds fans just don't know and I think deserve a little love here. Any other thoughts on Dolph Luque?
Yeah, Luque was, you think about his history is kind of tied up in issues of race and ethnicity and bigotry and things like that. And because, only the light-skinned Cuban players were ever allowed to come to the United States. So there were very few of them. And they also then got tarred with this kind of like fiery Latin label. But Luque was a tough dude, and he was a real competitor. And the one thing that the story I love is the one that sounds like one of our modern Reds. Luque was playing against the Giants and getting a lot of chirping from the dugout and a lot of it kind of racially tinged. And at one point he said he'd had enough and he put his glove and his hat on the mound and he went into the Giants dugout and he took a swing at the guy who was the biggest loudmouth on the bunch. And he missed the dude, and he actually cold cocked a young reserve player on the Giants named Casey Stengel, and laid Stengel out. But much like Amir Garrett, total free for all, one dude against an entire team, and chaos ensued. So it was almost 100 years ago, but Dolph Luque and Amir Garrett have a lot in common.
Absolutely, and. He ends up pitching until he's 44, Luque. So somewhat effective pretty much until the end. So
and then he retired to become the antagonist in Rocky IV.
I think that's right.
Close.
Wait a minute.
Close.
Wait a minute. All right, so that's all of our number fours. I guess we'll go now to number three. We'll go ahead and stick with Chris's number three because that's a guy that I very – nearly put in my top five as well. Just he's probably number six on my list. Chris?
Jim Maloney. Jim Maloney, the best Reds pitcher of the 1960s, who just dominant. I mean, no-hitter stuff they talk about. He threw two no-hitters as a Red, lost another one in the 11th inning, and had two others where he was in the seventh inning or later and had to leave the game. But like so many of those guys from the 60s who were – he threw so many innings, and by the time he was 27, 28 years old, was starting to come apart a little bit and was just hurt the entire 1970 season. So he was the ace of the he was in that gap. You know, he was a young player in 61 and he was a hurt player in 70. So he was never really able to get postseason. I don't think he ever pitched. No, he pitched one postseason game in 1961. But just a really unappreciated guy because his teams weren't great. But he's definitely on the list of top Reds pitchers of all time.
Yeah, there's like this alternate reality where he's kind of the veteran, kind of like the alternate reality we talked about a couple weeks ago about Mario Soto on that 1990 team could have been that veteran pitcher. Maloney was 30 in 1970. I mean, he wasn't over the hill. He was 30 years old. I mean, he came up as a 20-year-old in 1960. And so he could have had another few years left in him and been a big part of those Big Red Machine teams. Who knows? Maybe they win another series or two. But, again, a guy that kind of gets lost to history because he came just before the Big Red Machine. Jim Maloney, Chris's number three. Nate, let's go with your number three, actually, because I think we're the same. We got the same one, so I'll let you go ahead and talk about the number three on our list.
Well, I'm not going to be able to say quite as much as you guys, because I was still pretty young when he was around. But he was Jose Rijo was my number three. And up there with Barry Larkin, those were kind of the two Reds that formed my fanhood growing up. And I know we've talked about Rijo a lot here lately. But, yeah, he was just one of those sort of like those big what ifs. You know, he got hurt. Had he not, he was just lights out for all those years. One of my favorite little anecdotes is that he is the only player ever to complete a successful comeback after receiving Hall of Fame votes.
Impressive.
And he was good enough to where people like, you know, legitimately considered him to be a Hall of Famer. And then he still came back and pitched some more after that. I think it's pretty cool. But you got to see him a lot more sort of in your formative years. So I'll let you go a little deeper.
Yeah, go look at his baseball reference page because, you know, he has his career. And then kind of like Jim Maloney at age 30, it's basically over. And then there's five straight lines where it says, did not play in major or minor leagues, injured. And then comes back and pitches in two more seasons, you all, as many of you will remember. You know, I guess talking about Rijo right after Maloney, and I say Chris and I, or Nate and I had him at number three. Chris, you actually had him at number two on your list. I think it's perfectly defensible. He's in that, I would not compare him to Maloney necessarily, but to me, he's in the Eric Davis what if category of without injuries. I mean, this guy was absolutely, to me, inner circle Hall of Fame talent. And just, you know, the injuries, he was never able to actually reach it. But at his best, he was as good as anybody I've ever, well, at his best, he was better than anybody I've seen in a pitching in a Reds uniform. With the possible exception of Kevin Quackenbush.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he was one – I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but he was one of those guys I would put Soto, Castillo, Cueto, and Rijo are the four guys I would probably say. And a few weeks of Sonny Gray, where I felt like the Reds had one of the best pitchers in baseball going to the mound on any given night when this guy started.
It's rare.
Yeah, it's really rare. And you just felt like, I don't care who they're going against, this guy's got a chance to pitch to win a 1-0 game against another great pitcher.
Yeah. Again, he's one that I fear is going to be lost to history a little bit as well, just because of – although he does have the 1990 World Series, so he's going to be asked back every, you know, every 2 years or something for a reunion so we can trot him out onto the field, sell some tickets. All right. So, Chris, that's your top four already.
Top four.
So let's go. Let's hit Nate's number two or your that's your second through fifth, Chris. Nate, your number two is one that did not appear on our other lists, but a fine choice indeed. Johnny Vandermeer.
And, you know, it probably makes more sense to not have him on the list than it does to have him. But it was my favorite book in – or my favorite chapter in the Big 50 that read historical novel written by two hacks. But back-to-back no-hitters, that was pretty much my entire basis. That's freaking awesome.
It really is. I mean, I don't know.
Missed a couple good years, you know, because of military service. Could have been a little bit better, but I literally just I was just sitting back thinking before I did any research, what pitchers mattered the most or I've heard the most about, who has the biggest impact on Reds fandom. And I was like, how can you not have Johnny Vandermeer?
I love it.
I wonder what baseball Twitter would be like if some guy today goes into like the seventh inning of a back-to-back no-hitter.
Be like, fun.
It would be fun. It would be bonkers, you know? And everybody would be, and because I mean Vandermeer, you know, you tell me, Chad, but he was not an elite pitcher at that time, right? He was good, but not notable,
right? Not that. Well, I mean, crazy talent, struck out a lot of guys, threw hard, but he couldn't control them. He couldn't control the fastball, basically, walked a lot of guys, and he became much better afterwards. But yeah, I mean, but he became a superstar at that point. You know, across baseball, invited on all the shows, the radio shows. But think about it now. Everyone would be tuned into his game. Back then, you know, you read about it in the paper the next day, and everybody went nuts. But man, everybody in the world would be tuned in to some illegal stream to watch.
How cool must it have been for Cincinnati to be the you know, the hottest city in the country for a day?
It doesn't happen often.
No. Yeah, they were probably a whole lot more used to it, though, back in that era, to be truthful, than
yeah. That's true. That's true. All right, so that is that's Nate's number two. My number two is only appeared on appeared on no one else's list other than mine, but it's Epa Rixey. Epa Rixey pitched from 1912 to 1933 with the Reds. He came to the Reds as a 30-year-old in 1921, and just was dazzling. Won 25 games in 1922, led the league in innings pitched, games, and I don't know. Just he was a guy who he put up. I think let's see. I've got the list here. He was number two all time in wins above replacement for Reds starting pitchers over the course of his career. So, Epa Rixey, I can't believe none of you, the rest of you, had him
that's
on the list. Maybe another reason.
I just didn't want to pick anybody who, like, nobody listening to this show's grandpa didn't watch play.
Okay. I thought it was more that you didn't want to pick anyone who played college baseball at the University of Virginia.
No, Nick Howard's my next guy.
You got Nick Howard on there. Okay, there you go. So, Epa Rixey, look him up. Now, that's four of our top five. We all shared the same number one, which is, like I said, maybe it's not surprising, but let me recap just briefly. Nate's number five, Aroldis Chapman, four, Johnny Cueto, three, Jose Rio, two, Johnny Vandermeer. Chris, number five, Tom Seaver, four, Dolph Luque, three, Jim Maloney, two, Jose Rio. Me, number five, Johnny Cueto, four, Dolph Luque, three, Jose Rio, number two, Epa Rixey, and our number one, Bucky Walters. Now, hold on. He pitched at the same time, right, as Epa Rixey? No, he was a little after that, I guess. But not much after. How could you pick Bucky Walters, Chris?
Bucky Walters is so far and away the best Reds starting pitcher in terms of career. I mean, he was the best pitcher in baseball. They didn't have a Cy Young Award when he pitched, but he absolutely would have won it back-to-back in 39 and 40 when the Reds went to the World Series 2 years in a row. He was the MVP in 39 and came in third place in 40. Led the league in ERA, led the league in wins, led the league in innings. Just a dominant pitcher. And the greatest part about him is he wasn't even a pitcher.
Right.
Up until, you know, halfway through his career. He was a bad third baseman on the Phillies. And you know, a guy who is another Reds player or a Reds player and a coach, Jimmy Wilson, was with the Phillies and was like, man, why don't you try pitching? And he, you know, took to it pretty quickly and became, now he lost 21 games in his first full season as a starter, but he was decent. And then just dominated baseball in the pre-war and World War II era.
Yeah, you know, think about a guy who you said didn't have the Cy Young Award, but he literally almost won back-to-back MVP awards. I mean, it's unfathomable, frankly. And those, of course, were the two memorable years of 39 and 40 when the Reds made two World Series and won one. But I don't know. And he was, you know, that was his 30 and 31 seasons. Didn't arrive in Cincinnati until 29, so kind of the reverse of some of these other guys we've talked about. If you don't know Bucky Walters, you need to learn about him because he really, I definitely, far and away to me, was the only choice as the best pitcher in Reds history. Anything to add to any of that, Nate?
No, you know, I didn't watch him live too many times, but the brief research I did for this this podcast, he's the consensus. One thing I read had your boy Epa, but everything else is Bucky Walters far and away. And you know, I learned about him from reading your old book. It just seems like, you know, and you talked about how Twitter would go crazy for those back-to-back no-hitters. How would the, you know, the analysts and the journalists be all over that story? Somebody who is floundering, going to be out of the league as a position player to come back and become the greatest pitcher in a franchise's history. A pretty story.
Great story. Yeah, fantastic story. All right, so that's our top five best starting pitchers in Reds history. A little disappointed, Chris, that you didn't bring up Tony Mullane.
Yeah, you know, I thought about it. I just don't think that he had quite the career. And look, I'm, you know, there's a point at which I become biased towards modern day. You know, and I just don't know what to do with guys from prior to you know, the 1800s, no matter how handsome they allegedly were, I don't know what to do with them in terms of evaluation.
And Mullane was allegedly very, very handsome. If you go back and read the history books, they used to pitch him on Ladies' Day, I think was the story.
It's the story.
Yeah. What a time to be alive. Nice. All right. So
Ladies' Day back then.
What's that?
It was nice of them to have Ladies' Day back then.
I'm surprised they allowed the ladies in the ballpark. It was a different time. All right, how about we do a little bit of viewer mail? Anybody opposed to that?
Seems like the logical next step.
All right, these questions come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's where you two can support the world's most dangerous family. First question comes from Joe Farsing, as it commonly does. Get a little tired of that, but what are we going to do?
He's your leadoff man, just like Corey Patterson.
He is exactly like Corey Patterson in just about every way. Although I have no idea about whether he has had any contact with any of Dusty Baker's daughters.
Hello.
Yeah, right. No. Remember when that was a thing? It got reported in the papers.
Such a glorious, idiotic farce of a scandal.
Oh, ridiculous. Ridiculous. Joe Farsi asks, Royal Rumble of the Reds owners, Marge Schott with Shotzi, Carl Lindner, and Banana Bob in a fight to the death. Who wins? I can see Marge from the top rope with a flying elbow to Castellini, he says. I go with Marge on that as well. She's going to play dirty. She's going to fight dirty.
She's the toughest for sure.
Yeah. She'd have a cigarette in her mouth the whole time too, out of the corner of her mouth.
Being deceased isn't going to help her very much.
Well, relative. I do think she still might. That's a fair point, but I think she still wins.
You know she's haunting somebody.
She's haunting all of us. Next question comes from Joey Gaditza. Joey says, morning, gang. It's not the morning. Well, it might be when you listen to this. Do any of you have any past or present Reds players that you had a hard time cheering for? Past or present Reds players you had a hard time cheering for? I'll say, because I mentioned it on the Twitters earlier today, you know, Ryan Ludwig, had a hard time cheering for him. Chris may be answering silently if you're watching the video. If you're not watching the video, you have to wait. But, you know, Ryan Ludwig had that big screed against fans not supporting the Reds enough or, you know.
Was that the brother guy?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He should have been a professional wrestler. So, yeah, and I was like, dude, why? You know, really? You know? So, anyway, Ryan Ludwig for me. Nate, you, anyone?
Every mediocre to terrible leadoff hitter that the Reds managers figured they had to trot out. Juan Castro was my number one.
Really?
Yeah. For some reason, I guess.
Not as the Oro.
Every time he was in the lineup, which in my opinion was far too often.
Well, it's true. I mean, the guy was not. I mean, he had a great glove, but was not a major caliber starting shortstop.
Corey Patterson was on there. Chris Dickerson, Willie Taveras.
Those guys. I never held it against those guys that they were not in a role they could succeed in.
That was back when I cared probably a little too much.
That's a natural. It's natural.
Yeah. They weren't performing for your team.
Yeah. If you can't see, you know, if you're listening to this, there was a certain second baseman who very much enjoyed himself and was pleased with himself and just had a whole show about him that once, if you know, what was the whole thing in the locker room in Dusty Baker's office
with
Rosecrans?
I don't remember how that went down, but I know that Rosecrans was interviewing Dusty, I think, and Phillips. I think
Frazier set him up. Frazier riled him up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So there's another two on my list.
Yeah, yeah. And two guys who, you know, are very popular amongst the average Reds fan, Todd Frazier and Brandon Phillips. But, yeah, Rosecrans had written something about how, I don't know, on base percentage wasn't good or something. And Phillips went on just a profane, rant in Dusty's office. Yeah, BP. One guy that I would mention here, and I felt guilty kind of disliking this guy, and maybe it was sort of like the reason I kind of clung to guys like Adam Dunn. I felt like they were underrated by most people. People got mad at them for what they couldn't do instead of celebrating what they could do. And this is what I kind of did, maybe in the reverse, with Pokey Reese back in the late 90s. You know, that guy, everybody acted like he was the greatest player ever. And I don't know. I never warmed to Pokey Reese. So,
which is a shame because one of the most likable names in Reds history.
It's true. It's true. All right. Kyle Kapler, Hall of Fame type question. Fred McGriff, Fred Lynn, or Fred Lewis? What do you think, Chris?
None of the above.
None?
No, I don't think so. I think McGriff's the only one who's close. And Paul, very, very good.
Fred Lynn hit a grand slam in the first All-Star game I remember watching, so I thought he was great.
Won the MVP and the Rookie of the Year in the same year. That's pretty cool.
It's a good way to start your career.
And then it all went. There's really no way to go up from there.
Yeah. Nate, Fred McGriff, Fred Lynn, Fred Lewis.
McGriff gets the nod because the crime dog is a Hall of Fame nickname.
It's true. Plus, his defensive skills were fantastic thanks to Tom Amansky. That's a deep cut that some of you will get and some of you won't.
It really is.
James Urban, what's one place you haven't been but are dying to go to someday? One place you haven't been but are dying to go to someday. A Reds World Series game. Hey-o!
Hey! Ooh, that's good.
For me, that's going to be oh, man. We've done a lot of preparation, as you can tell, as usual, as per usual on this.
You were mailed.
You know where I've never been? I've never been to New Orleans, Louisiana.
Ooh. Can be fun there. Very fun.
I've never been there either.
I went there with my parents, and it was still fun.
Oh, now that's high praise. I was thinking somewhere like Japan. Nate and I were talking about it the other day, but I really want to go to Japan. It's like a different country and everything.
A whole new world.
Yeah. What about you, Nate? Anywhere? Oh, Alaska, yes.
Mm-hmm. Alaska in August, maybe. Switzerland is at the very, very top of my list. one of those Nordic countries. You know, you get on the Instagrams and there's random accounts that just show incredible views and beautiful places. And it seems like every time it's Switzerland or Norway or somewhere like that. So Switzerland's up top.
Don't think they're.
They don't touch. They're cold.
Don't know that they're interchangeable.
They're right. That's true. That's true. So. You know, speaking of Alaska, during the lockdown back in the 2020, I spent like, I don't know, 2 weeks trying to talk my wife into moving to Alaska. Couldn't talk her into it. We were locked in and did a deep dive on this this show, Life Below Zero. I don't know if you heard of that show. No. They're living out in the Alaskan bush. And, I was not successful in trying to get her to make that move. So, surprisingly. Rich Thompson. Hi, everybody. If the 2022 season gets underway and the Reds get off to a rough start, do you think that David Bell will be on the hot seat? If so, how many games in the lost column would trigger a move by ownership? Kind of like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop, he says. I'm not sure it's exactly like that, Richard. But that's all right. Is David Bell going to be on the hot seat if the Reds get off to a slow start? What do you think, Nate?
I don't think so. Is ownership expecting to win? Are they going to hold him accountable?
Do they want to?
Yeah. Do they even care enough to put a team on the field that can win? I will say this. If the playoffs are expanded and so a 500 team is going to get in the playoffs and they start off really bad, I don't know. They may try to make him the sacrificial lamb, but my real answer is no, I don't expect David Bell to.
I mean, what did it take for Brian Price to get fired? 4-16 or 4-17?
Yeah, after four consecutive 9-loss seasons.
Right. I think David Bell's got more leeway than Brian Price did. I don't see him getting fired in the season unless it's just really, really, really bad.
The players seem to like him. I think that's going to carry him as far as anything else.
Yeah, I guess he's probably there. And again, the whole thing is, whatever, you know. He's not the best. He's not the worst. Whatever. Joe Farsing again. What's the worst possible house pet, and why is it a cat?
I do not appreciate that.
Agreed. Ooh. He's not wrong.
I'm going to have to agree as well, but I'm going to ask Nate not to tell his lovely fiance that I said that.
That cat may come in there.
I know, right?
You may steal your breath tonight, Chad.
She's going to make it soon. People that have reptiles.
They stay in a glass box, though. They're not running around the house, pooping at will and stealing your soul.
Yeah, but if they get out of their little cage, if a cat gets out of its home, it's fine. Dog gets out of his crate, it's fine. Your python gets out of its crate.
Was that movie where the cats were stealing the kids' breath?
Tombstone. I think it was Tombstone.
All right, maybe not.
Never heard of that. The clear answer here is the worst possible house pet is obviously a teenage boy. Joseph Prince, as the Reds seem to be operating in just a save money mode, will they accept a Hunter Green and Mike Moustakas trade for a minor return just to save money? Nick Cross said they wouldn't, and I don't see it happening. That does seem like a typical Reds move, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that if they were going to attach somebody to Moose or Gino to get rid of him, it would be an established player that's also making some money, somebody like a Castillo or a Gray, the proven track record that another team's going to want.
And if you can get somebody to take it on that. Yeah,
they'll hang on to these young guys that they can control for cheap for years.
Yeah, I think
they're not
so.
Trading them.
Yeah. All right, two more quick questions, and then we're done. This has been a brisk hour of discussion. First question is another one from James Urban. Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and Harry Potter. One of them has to go. Which one is getting the boot? Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter.
Film or book?
Oh, you're thinking too much about this one, Nate.
Yeah, you can keep your Star Wars novels.
Just the franchise. Which one? Go ahead, either of you, jump in.
Launch Lord of the Rings into the sun and never look back.
What?
What miserable garbage. I was so happy today. Joe Posnanski's daily newsletter was about how his family tried to watch Lord of the Rings. They actually watched all three movies together as a family when they were in a COVID quarantine, and how miserable they all were.
That says more about his family than it does.
Oh, brother. I went to the theater when that first one came out, and I sat there for about 20 minutes. And I looked at my buddy I went with. I'm like, is this what this is? Is this right? Is this what this is? And he's like, yeah, this is the story. And I was like, oh, okay. And I waited another half an hour, and thank God I fell asleep and slept on the next, what is it, 4 hours long, the first one? 6 hours long?
Watch these.
Oh, brother. Oh, I've tried to read the books three times. Just pretentious gibberish.
Nate, I presume that you're going to have a different answer.
Yeah, I would get rid of Harry Potter, though I wouldn't like doing that either. My better half is a giant Harry Potter fan, so shortly after we got together, sat down, read all the books, watched each movie after each book, and I'd never really watched them before, and it's incredibly entertaining, but man, like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings were two very, very important things for my childhood.
Mm. To me, this is not really a difficult question. It's, in my mind, very clearly, Lord of the Rings. You just got to get rid of it. You know, listen, I don't love Harry Potter necessarily. Read the books to the kids when they were younger, you know, watch the movies. They're perfectly fine, but I will say that the Harry Potter, the rides at Universal Studios are amazing. If you haven't ridden the new Hagrid ride, well, it's new as of a couple of years ago. Top notch if you like amusement parks. Star Wars is Star Wars. Obviously, we can't get rid of that one. Lord of the Rings, you know, I watched the first movie, and I remember thinking, that's okay. It's fine. I didn't hate it. I wasn't didn't have the reaction Chris did. But I never watched the other movies. Never felt any desire to go watch the other movies. And I have brothers giving me a hard time about that at one point. And so I said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch all three. So I said, I'm going to start back at the first one and just go ahead and watch all three. And I made it through 20 minutes of the first one. I was like, I really don't want to watch this. I'm in my home. You know, I've got a drink and it's warm. And I'm like, I got every movie in the world here that I could watch. I just like, I don't want to do it. So it may be great. The third one won a Best Picture Academy Award, which is insanity. But
that is insane.
Sorry.
I'll give you that.
Did you watch The Hobbit? If you thought Lord of the Rings were bad, The Hobbit are like 50 times worse than Lord of the Rings.
Well, Lord of the Rings was three movies, and it should have been for three books. They made The Hobbit three movies, and it was one small book. The Hobbit was atrocious.
Yeah.
They just forced a little love fest between a dwarf and a elf that wasn't anywhere in the narrative because we all were clamoring for that.
Oh, well, obviously, yeah. Were there any Ewoks in that one? Ewoks. Did Star Wars is not perfect.
The Ewok spinoff movies?
No.
Do yourself well. I don't think you really call it a favor, but if you find yourself, the rest of the family's gone to bed and you've had a couple drinks, you can find one of the old Ewok movies. There's worse ways to spend an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to do that, Nate. I'm sorry. what's the batting average on Star Wars movies, by the way? It's not as high as people, for all the cultural cachet Star Wars has. The bad average of good to bad movies, I mean, there's some clunkers in there, you know. Return of the Jedi, as much as I loved it when I was 10 or 12 or whatever, kind of stinks.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up under a microscope.
It's true.
It's a trap. anyway, that's a good question.
Terrible answers.
Well, two good answers. Joseph Prince for the final question tonight. Goofy question. I prefer minor league teams to have cool names such as the Tortugas or the Albuquerque Isotopes. What should the Reds minor league teams change their names to? I would suggest either the Isotopes or the Tortugas. Oh, well, they're already – one of them's already the Tortugas.
Good point. So like the Louisville Isotopes.
There we go.
Louisville Bats – pretty great. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Chattanooga Lookouts is a pretty great name.
Chattanooga Lookouts is good.
Yeah.
Great logo.
Dayton Dragons is not, you know, naturally fitting their city, but that's a good name. Good name. Good logo. Good mascot.
Yeah, the Reds actually have pretty good ones now that we start thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
I might suggest we change Dayton, change their name to the Dayton Eye of Saurons. Is that what it is? Sauron? Sauron? How do you pronounce that? Try to make a Lord of the Rings reference there. The
Dayton Gimleys. Grimleys. Ed Grimley.
Ed Grimley.
You know, my uncle has the this is my secondary claim to fame. My uncle won the contest to name the Dragons mascot way back in the day.
What did he come up with?
Heater.
Really?
Yeah, he's pretty good. You know, fire breathing, fastball. Yeah. He won some sort of, a free suite for a night, and I believe a personal appearance by the mascot to an event of his choosing.
Wow.
I think he still may have be able to cash in.
I actually tried to win that contest, and I submitted the name Speedball, and it didn't get picked. Throw that speedball by you.
Traditional baseball term.
Make him look like a fool boy. Nate, any final Lord of the Rings thoughts before we move on? Hold on. If you're not watching the video, Nate's name now says Treebeard.
Is that a Lord of the Rings guy?
Is that a thing?
Oh, okay. My God.
No.
I'll give you that one. His name's like Aragorn and Ladriel and all these crazy
Lego man.
There's an old kind of like tree-ish creature whose name is Treebeard.
That's lazy.
I legitimately Googled. So while we were sitting here, I Googled stupid Lord of the Rings names. And there's a website with the 20 stupidest Lord of the Rings names. But Treebeard wasn't even on the list.
That's absurd.
Treebeard smacks of – what's that, Nate?
It's not a reputable site Chris is looking at.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, fair enough.
Treebeard seems like what's his name that wrote the Lord of the Rings? Oh goodness,
Tolkien.
Tolkien. Yeah. It smacks of. All right, look, I can't come up with a name here today. I'm just gonna put this placeholder in here. I'll come back to it. And he forgot before he sent it off to the editor. He never figured out a name for Treebeard.
Oh yeah, Treebeard. Yeah, Saint placeholder.
All right, guys, that's episode number 407 of the Riverfront podcast, the world's most dangerous podcast. We're everywhere at YouTube now. Subscribe, smash that like button. Find us on wherever you find podcasts. We're there. Subscribe, do your thing. Go leave good reviews or just don't leave bad reviews. I think that's really all that I ask. Final thoughts for us. We'll begin with you, Nate.
Go watch Lord of the Rings. That's it. That's all I got.
That really may be your final thoughts ever on the podcast. Your final thoughts today, Chris?
I would say that Beverly Hills 90210 is a better, deeper, and more rich literary franchise than Lord of the Rings.
No. Oh, we're gonna get some hate after this.
Let it rip, right. Nerd.
Thank you, guys. This was fun. Appreciate everyone listening. Again, go subscribe and do all that stuff for Treebeard Nate, for the boss, Chris Garber, and for Samwise Gamgees. This is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.